Good morning. This is Jack Llewellyn, and for the upcoming chamber events, simply go to durangobusiness.org. I'm here with Tony Vaccari from the airport. How are you?
Doing great. Good morning, Jack.
Well, thank you first off for coming in. You're a busy guy.
Ah, thank you. Things have been hopping this year, but we always make time for chamber chat.
Well, you know, good. I may have to call you again and say, hey, come in next week. But how long have you been in the position now?
It's been actually almost 2 years. I was in it, actually, the first year was an interim role.
Yeah.
And then I'm about a little over a year into the permanent full-time role, but I count both years.
Well, as you should. Did you get a paycheck both years?
I did.
Then you count it. That's my philosophy. So let me ask you, a lot of exciting things going on at the airport. What are some of the latest things and how are we looking compared to last year?
Yeah, things have been very busy. 2018's been a good year so far. Mm-hmm. Passenger traffic with the combination of American and United Airlines is up about 2%.
Oh, it's up. Fantastic.
Yeah, over 2017. So we're seeing increased utilization, which is absolutely great to see for the region.
Yeah.
And things have been hopping. Obviously, everyone's very familiar with the 416 fire throughout the month of June. You know, the airport played a critical role in that. Most of the people, I think, are familiar now with the United States Forest Service air tanker base that's based out at DRO.
Right. Now, how many flights were coming in and out just for that? Because the helicopters would fly right over our house, you know, or right in the flight path. So, I mean, they were in and out a ton.
It was incredible, especially in the early stages of the fire where air support was critical when we didn't have a lot of ground resources in place.
Right.
The tanker base at one point was flying somewhere between 30 and 40 operations a day.
Wow.
They had a couple of heavy air tankers that were flying continuous operations. They'd have two of them that were rotating, one in the air, one on the ground. Continual fuel and slurry all day long.
So the slurry, they mix that right there on site?
They do, yeah. They have water, and they bring in the retardant in a sort of a concentrate, come in, mix it, and load it right up. They have a piping system. They push it out to the hard stand where the aircraft parks, load it up, and off they go.
So it's great having the obviously that tanker station based here in Durango.
It is. Tremendous resource, obviously, for Durango and really all of Southwest Colorado.
Sure.
When you think about the ability, you think about how critical that air support was to protecting homes and structures and individuals in those early stages of the fire. And if that tanker base, say we'd been calling for support out of Grand Junction or Colorado Springs, you know, that different flight time there can make the difference.
Oh, absolutely. So along with that, it doesn't sound like that impacted any of the commercial traffic.
It did not. Commercial traffic was pretty seamless overall in terms of a safe operation. We're able to integrate those just fine. The airspace accommodated that, which was great. And then it was also good to see our passenger traffic in the month of June was actually up over last year.
Wow.
So, you know, people are wondering what were the economic impacts of the fire. I don't think we'll know the full impacts of those until the summer fully fleshes out here. But early indications, at least from the airport metrics, are that we're seeing relatively stable traffic and even increased traffic.
Well, and I can say I contributed a little bit. You know, I flew to Brazil. So I went from DRO to Dallas, Dallas to Miami, Miami to Rio de Janeiro. And then I actually flew, what was it? Oh, Durango, Denver, Denver, L.A. Didn't take advantage of that weekend flight.
No nonstop for you.
Well, you know, the reason it just didn't work on my travel schedule. But what an incredible option to have.
Yeah, it is. This is the third year of seasonal DRO LAX traffic. That route is being made available by American Airlines. They continue to test it out. It's done really well. American is really excited about the route and think it has potential in the future. I get people ask me all the time, why is it only on Saturdays? That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And the reason behind it really is that Los Angeles International Airport is a very congested airport. It's gate constrained. So if you're an airline and wants to add extra routes, you can't just add one in. You have to subtract an existing route. So what happens is Saturday is the slowest travel day of the week nationwide throughout the system. It's also a low tide for business travel. So essentially what that allows is they take a business route, we'll just say LA Sacramento, right? So maybe that flies during most of the week five times a day. On a Saturday, probably don't have the same demand. They pull one of those frequencies off and use that plane to fly to Durango.
Oh, makes sense.
They come here, test a market, see if they can establish something for the future. Turns out it's doing pretty well. The trouble is, in order for us to gain frequency, say Monday, Thursday, Saturday, you have to be able to bump out a business route. So you have to be able to show really strong demand. I think we're heading in the right direction. Not quite there yet, but hopefully not too far down the road.
So let me get. So we have three flights a day to Dallas.
Correct.
3 to Phoenix?
Currently 2 to 3. Okay. Depends on the day. Most of the time, 2.
Okay, so 2 to Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And then how many to Denver?
During June, 6? There was actually 8.
8?
Yeah, 8. Whoa. Daily. The typical during the spring was about 6. They ramped up to 8. I think it's back to July 7, rather,
right,
in July.
So what's great, you know, I just came from a conference, and I was out in L.A., and talking to other chambers, and they were like, well, where do you fly out? I said, Durango. And I told them we have 6 to 8 a day, and I was pretty close on the numbers. And they were blown away. They're in communities smaller than ours. Mm-hmm. So we're very fortunate to have the service we do.
We are. You know, I think we always want to strive to gain additional air service, and the airport is always talking to other air carriers about serving the region. Obviously, we want that to be a key here. But it's important to recognize that we do have a strong air service profile here when you've got 2 of the 3 major legacy carriers in the United States,
right,
and you've got daily service to 3 hub destinations that connect you to basically anywhere in the world.
Yeah, no, I did that in Brazil, like I said, you know, and I flew back. I actually, Sao Paulo direct to Dallas, Dallas to Durango, and it was so easy, you know, to get through that. Now, let me ask you this. So, I know you spoke at the Economic Alliance. One of the things you were talking about is just out there on the apron and how many planes you can park. Mm-hmm. And so what does it cost to buy one of those little pushback Jeeps?
Yeah. So our current apron, if anyone's flown out of Durango, accommodates 4 commercial aircraft out there. They're parked at an angle, and they obviously power into the parking space. And when everyone's loaded up, they power right on out.
Right. And by power, meaning on the power of the airplane.
Exactly. Yep. They use the jets to create propulsion and turn right on out of their underground power. As we're continuing to see more utilization at Durango and bigger aircraft, we're running out of space on the commercial apron. Mm-hmm. So in order to get ahead of that, we're looking and working with the airlines to institute pushback operations.
Yeah.
So in this case, people are pretty familiar with this. At most hub airports, you pull straight in.
Right.
And when you're ready to go, the airlines use a pushback equipment and a tow bar to push the aircraft back with equipment, essentially.
Right.
Push it back clear of the other aircraft and then start up the engines and taxi out from there.
Mm-hmm.
By doing so, it looks like we're going to be able to accommodate a 5th aircraft on the apron and allow us to experience that growth without having to do any major infrastructure investments in the short term. So it buys us some real good time as we're continuing to see growth.
Yeah. And so what is one of those little pushback little carts? I mean, I always see them. They're just open seat, and they got the little bar that comes out and pushes it.
To be honest, I don't know. It's not an airport investment. It's the airlines that will actually buy the particular equipment as well as the tow bars.
Oh, interesting. So that's up to the airline, not the airport.
It is. Exactly. Yep. The airport will essentially repaint the apron, lay it out, create a schematic to make sure it's safe for the aircraft, create adequate wingtip clearance, room for fueling, etc. But the airline will be responsible for the actual pushback operation, including the equipment.
Okay, interesting. I did not know that. Mm-hmm. Now, I heard also you're looking at doing some renovations with baggage claim.
Yeah, actually baggage makeup, other side of the house, so front side, essentially.
Uh-huh.
So we're looking at a pretty exciting project. We currently have this project out to bid. We're expecting bids back from contractors first week of August.
Okay.
And what it is essentially is all the behind the scenes area of the airline operations,
which I've been back there, and those need improving.
They do. They're not our most proud area necessarily. Yeah. It could use some improvement and expansion overall, and so we're doing that. We've worked with the airlines for about the last 9 months on design, and have come up with something that we think is going to work really well. So if anyone's been back there now, what you have right now is an existing dual use area. It's mixed use garage and office. So it's garage where the airlines stow their equipment, ground service vehicles, bags, all that kind of thing. It's where they make up the bags after the TSA screen them, take them out to the aircraft, and it's also where their offices are staged.
Right.
It's a very congested area. We're out of office space. It's tight.
Which are converted closets, most of them.
Exactly.
Yep.
Not the classiest of environments.
Yeah.
So what we've done is work with the airlines, and we're going to deconflict garage from office. So we're going to essentially build a new structure, about a 4,500 square foot structure that'll be baggage makeup only. So it'll be for vehicles and baggage processing, essentially. And then we're going to renovate the existing interior space that currently contains garage and make it an all-office environment.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, so it's a great project.
Well, and I look at stuff like that just to continue to improve, because obviously if the airlines are hearing, you know, complaints from their personnel, they're like, well, wait a minute, you know, we're hearing this every day, so you guys are taking the right steps under your command, so to speak, and under your managing to do that. Now, what have been some of the challenges that you face as the airport director?
Yeah, I think really at the end of the day, one of the biggest challenges we face is always funding. Mm-hmm. You know, any major organization that's looking at particularly large capital projects like we do, we have some aging infrastructure. You know,
right.
The airport terminal itself was built in 1988. This is our 30th anniversary year.
Wow.
It's pretty exciting. Over 7 million passengers served over 30 years. So we have aging infrastructure there, but not just the terminal. I mean, we look around at the parking lots and the roadways, some of the equipment. Everything at the airport is aging to an extent, and so there's a lot of investment that's required.
Right.
I would say definitely one of the big challenges is looking at the entirety of those needs and trying to prioritize and rank them, assign them to appropriate funding sources,
sure.
and figuring out how to strategically invest in a way that we continue to support the air service for the region. I feel pretty good about where we're at overall.
Yeah.
But it'll continue to need work as we develop that capital plan over the next decade.
Well, and I think, too, you know, when you look at some of the things that, to me, it's always fun watching someone come off the plane for the first time and just hearing them say, oh my gosh, the view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not put into the, I think it's kind of fun when you come down the steps
yeah.
and you get to see the little platas, you know, or you don't go into the, you know, right out the breezeway,
the jet
bridge and all that. But one of those things. So what had been the most rewarding thing going the other side for yourself?
Yeah, I just think being a conduit for air service for the region. You know, at the end of the day, I think it's important for people to recognize that the airport is really essentially a landlord, is all we are.
Yeah.
We own and operate the facilities. We own the runway and taxiway, the terminal, parking lots, roadways, all of those things. And we're responsible for the safe operation of the airport. Not everyone knows the airport has a 10-person fire department, full-time fire department that's FAA required to respond to any kind of an aviation accident. And I'm really proud of the fact that we facilitate a safe operating environment for what amounts to almost 375,000 passengers a year who use this airport,
right.
and they trust us to maintain a safe airport. You know, aside from that, we have tenants. So we are a landlord and the airlines are our tenants. So the airport doesn't control things like ticket pricing, baggage delivery.
Even though people think it.
TSA screening, things of that nature.
Yeah.
We work closely with the airlines to make sure that we're presenting the best possible product to the customer, but it's ultimately their product.
Right.
But we're really proud, and I'm proud as an extension of the safe environment we've created. In ways we've looked at different financial potential to make strategic investments to allow for that growth we're continuing to see.
Now, along with that line, if I know you guys have a company you're working with, you know, doing some surveying and kind of finding out some things. What are some of the things, and we've only got about a minute left, that you're getting feedback that people want to see the next expansion or what improve? My wife would say the restrooms, but you know, what are some of the things you're getting back?
Yeah, well, you can go ahead and tell your wife that public restrooms are on the docket on the capital improvement plan for 2019.
I'll let her know.
Within 1 year, you should see some actions, hopefully on some major renovations to those
restrooms. Very nice, very nice.
Yeah, so what I think people, the number one thing we're seeing in survey responses is people want reliable and safe air service. And they want to continue to see that developed. And you know, as I mentioned, the airport doesn't directly control that, but this terminal project we were talking about feeds directly into that. We talked about no office space. We're adding space, so there'll be vacant space so that when there's enough demand
in the
region with growth, we're ready to essentially hand off a turnkey operation to an airline to come in here and provide additional competition and additional options for our air service.
What would be the number one and two places you would like to see service to on a daily basis?
For me personally, I would like to see Salt Lake City served, not because it's a major destination for our travelers, but it would be served by Delta Airlines potentially, and that would get us into another major legacy carrier and give a lot of opportunities for our flyers. So I view that as a great opportunity. Houston's another one that pops up a lot.
Sure.
A lot of local demand, strong ties to the oil and gas industry, a lot of second home ownership. So those are two that are on our near-term radar in addition to trying to expand the LA offer.
Right. Now, if somebody would like to, you know, because everybody has opinions, if they would like to offer their opinion, what is the best channel to do that?
Yeah. So the best channel is probably to visit our website, which is flydurango.com. We have contact information right up top there. We have an email address that comes to the airport. It's a group email address that I get personally.
Okay.
It's just airport@durangogov.org. If you shoot an email there, our administrative staff will see that, including myself.
Uh-huh.
and we can respond to any comments, and there's phone numbers there as well.
Yeah, well, I know I did one time, and you did respond quickly.
Good.
Appreciate that. Well, Tony, thank you for everything you're doing. It's one of those thankless jobs, I'm sure, many, many times, like, my flight was canceled, and you're like, that's not my responsibility. But honestly, thank you for everything you do for the traveling public out there.
Thank you very much.
Will you come back?
I'll be back.
All right. And check it out at flydurango.com, and I'm going to give a quick plug. You can also sign up to receive special airfares, special deals. That's on there, too, I think.
It is. The Durango Airfare Airport, or the Durango Airport Airfare Club.
And join it, because there's some great deals out there.
There can be. We've had people get international flights to Europe for under $500 round trip. It's incredible.
Sign up. Sign up immediately. We've got to sit back to the studios. You've been listening to Chamber Chat. Have a great day.